Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OGGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. Today, we are previewing the Atlantic Division offseason-wise. A lot to talk about. Corey, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Nick. We are here. The NBA season just concluded last night, and we are back to work the next day in my favorite time of the year, the NBA offseason.
Yeah, the offseason is definitely going to be more exciting than what we saw in the finals. We're finally done recapping games. We, you know, probably did about 30 of those. It's good to get back to some offseason talks, some free agency, some salary cap stuff. Before we get started, just a quick reminder, check out OGGBasketball.com for everything offseason, free agency, draft-wise. Our boy Dylan Jackson has been killing all the draft coverage, just dropped a new mock today. But in terms of podcasts, also check out the OGG Podcast Network. You know, we got a ton of pods on there. Myself on the Brooklyn Buzz, Corey and Flexus Hoops, JBT, Shuttleworth Initiative, you know, the Bird Calls. They're just, you know, pods for everybody. And you can check us out, like I said, on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio. But let's get started with the Raptors. Raptors had a really interesting season. You know, 59-23, second best record in the league. But when it came to the postseason, the first round they were able to beat Washington. The second round they got swept by the Cavs. And it kind of just killed the morale of the whole Raptors franchise, it felt like.
Yeah, I mean, again, we kind of too early crowned the Raptors the team that possibly dethroned LeBron James, who the Cavaliers had a whirlwind season where they were up and down, sporadic, all over. And the Raptors, obviously winning 59 games, they looked really good at times. They had arguably the best bench in the NBA. Dwayne Casey changed the philosophy of the offensive system. DeRozan and Kyle Lowry were both moving the ball more. Everybody else was more involved. DeRozan was hitting threes this season. It just felt like a different Toronto team. But then after kind of struggling to get by the Wizards, who obviously, you know, they have star power and John Wall and Bradley Beal, so they're not like an easy team by any means. And then they just got completely ramrodded by the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, LeBron James hitting a running floating bank shot for a game winner one game. When that shot went in, that was just I think it was game two, or game three. That was the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, it just kind of
the Raptors just couldn't handle it.
It ripped out their soul. And like they already were kind of scared of LeBron. That pretty much did the deal. And we mentioned, you know, Dwayne Casey being out, no head coach there now. Talking about the cap situation, the Raptors are not in a great cap situation. They're essentially almost capped out, you know, I think around like 700K from being hard capped. So what they'll probably try to do is move some deals, maybe move a CJ Miles. They obviously have Lowry's terrible deal, DeRozan's deal, which isn't terrible because he's still a very good player. But then Ibaka at 21 mil isn't nice either.
Yeah, the cap situation is terrible. If they were to bring back Lucas and Van Vliet, they'd be over the hard cap, just for example.
And you don't want to do that.
Their wiggle room, right. Their wiggle room is very little. Kyle Lowry's going to be making $31 million next year. DeMar DeRozan, $27, basically $28 million. Serge Ibaka, $21.5 million. Valanciunas, $16.5 million. And then CJ Miles at $8 million. That's a lot of money tied up in four guys, two of which are not very good, like not built for this NBA anymore. You know, Serge Ibaka just looked a little bit slow to me. He's just a little bit up there in age. Not really, but, you know, maybe the birth certificate is fake and he's actually 4 years older. Who really knows? but he looks a little bit slower to me, and that contract to me is the worst they have on their books. Because Larry DeRozan, I think they can still play at a high level, but it's going to be the Ibaka and Valanciunas contract in particular that really limit this team. CJ Miles can be moved. I don't know why they would move him, though, because you brought in CJ Miles to be the marksman he is, and I think he's been fine. But, you know, you got to make some kind of move because, obviously, finishing second or third every year in the East isn't good enough.
Yeah, and CJ Miles is a guy, like you mentioned, they could move, maybe pick up another deal, maybe moving a combination of some of the other young guys for a draft pick or something, just opening up the books because, like we said, they just don't have much wiggle room at the cap. And this team doesn't want to be hard capped. They probably don't want to go into luxury tax, you know, even more into luxury tax, knowing that their team's not going to win a championship. In terms of team needs, what do you think the Raptors need?
I think they need to address the front court. And obviously, that's
an issue. Money in there.
Right. But I would like to then see them adjust to the NBA. Valanciunas is solid offensively, but, you know, kind of flat footed and slow on defense. Ibaka, as I already ranted about. So I would like to see them kind of get a stretch five or a stretch four. You know, somebody who can just give them some more space and give them some more 3-point shooting. But again, you know, how many guys are like that on the market? Who can they possibly trade for if they wanted to, who would want to take out one of those bad contracts to give them a stretch for. But for me, I think the front court need to be addressed because I'm okay with the wings and the guard situation. I think they have a lot of youth on the bench, and then Larry and DeRozan, to me, they're going to be Mr. Consistent.
Yeah, I think what they really need is a third star. They need somebody else, you know, kind of take over, or they need to score more shooting. Like you said, a stretch four would be nice, someone what Ibaka's supposed to do. I also wouldn't mind a proven winner or like a veteran type on this team, you know, even at the point guard position or any other position. Just a leadership guy doesn't even necessarily have to play. Obviously, they need a coach, which is obviously going to be big in terms of any offseason move. In terms of team free agents, we already kind of touched on a little bit. Lucas Nogueira, restricted free agent, Fred VanVleet, you know, it's going to be tough for them to re-sign both these guys. Obviously, VanVleet's a little bit more valuable, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think Fran VanVleet is the only guy you want to bring back. But again, you don't bring him back just for the sake of bringing him back or matching a contract. You know, he's got to be... He's a restricted free agent, so he's got to be, you know, right in the realm of being probably under $4.5 million, like if it, that's the, even pushing it for me, that's like Ron Baker money, and I don't know if Fred VanVleet is even worth that yet.
I think VanVleet could get that contract.
I agree, especially with how he played for a stretch of time. You know, he was hitting threes, and he's a decent ball handler, scrappy on defense. But I think if it goes over $3 million, I probably let him go. But I'm going to be tracking him and wanting to bring him back.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy, and he's, you know, a scrappy player. He's a guy you like having around for your culture and terms, and I agree. I think VanVleet's number is going to matter, and it might mean getting rid of one of the other young guys. Maybe you trade, you know, a Siakam or a Poeltl or a DeLon Wright for a future first-round pick or something. I don't know. It's the Raptors are in an interesting situation. Lucas Nogueira, I think he's only brought back in terms of veteran minimum. I think they, you know, don't even give him a qualifying offer and just see what happens. Trade-wise, what do you think happens Raptor-wise?
Well, not to mention, and I don't know how I let this slip, you know, Norman Powell, he made $1.4 million last year. He's making $9.3 million next year.
Oof. And he did not play. He did not see a lot of minutes.
No, so. And he signed through 2021 and 2022. And in 2020, 2021, he'll be making $10.8 million. He'll be making $10 million after next season. So his contract's going up, and he hasn't shown that his contract should be going up. So – you know, possibly maybe they try and package Norman Powell and get him out of there, or they give him a chance. But I just realized, you know, that's more money on the books for a guy who really hasn't played.
That's where coaching comes in, too. Maybe they bring in a coach who thinks, all right, Norman Powell, like when he did play the previous seasons, when they signed him to that deal, he looked like a good player. He looked like he could have been, you know, a future, not all-star or anything, but a contributor to a good team. And he just kind of fell off. Some of that could have been Dwayne Casey. Could be a coaching change. We'll see what happens with that. But DeLon Wright definitely outplayed him last year. In terms of trades, you kind of hinted at already. You know, they're going to look to get some of these contracts off the books. Definitely, they don't want to be in the luxury tax, not contending. The only splash move I've heard about the Raptors is like a crazy sign and trade scenario where they get DeMarcus Cousins. And that would be, you know, signing him to a big deal, sending some assets back to the Pelicans, and probably sending out JV and maybe like a CJ Miles. But that's highly unlikely. I don't think there's a ton of trade moves for this team to make.
Yeah, I mean, a signing trade for DeMarcus Cousins, obviously, would probably be the most ideal because, like you mentioned, that's a third superstar. And he might be a little bit cheaper because of the ruptured Achilles. But
it's also a huge risk.
I don't know. It's a huge risk for both sides. You know, obviously, we're not talking about the Pelicans now, but you know, the Pelicans would have to be okay with giving up, you know, a superstar and getting back, you know, a mix array of not sure how those guys may look next to Anthony Davis.
Work out really well for the Pelicans. Sorry to cut you off, Corey. But if you added in a DeLon Wright, I don't know what the Raptors would send back, but an OG Anunoby or a DeLon Wright type of player or a Jakob Poeltl type, and then maybe some draft assets. I mean, that would be good. And getting something for Cousins would definitely help because I don't know if the Pelicans are 100% committed to re-signing him because he's going to want a ton of money. But coming back from a ruptured Achilles at his size is incredibly difficult. We saw what it did to Kobe Bryant late in his career. So,
yeah, I mean, I think the Pelicans would have interest in CJ Miles, you know, just because we saw the lack of three-point shooting. Obviously, Solomon Hill has that big contract for New Orleans, but, you know, he hasn't been a three-point shooter. They hoped he was going to be. So CJ Miles could be a part of a deal like that, but I agree. It's going to be tough.
Yeah. Trade wise, it's tough to see anything. Even free agent target wise, it's not like they're going to have a lot of opportunities cap wise, unless they move some of these guys and open up space. So most likely it's going to be veteran minimum guys. Any guys you stick out to you that they could try to make a move for in the free agency with their low cap number?
I mean, just, you know, some guys, you know, like possibly Doug McDermott, he's a restricted free agent, but like, you know, I don't think anyone's going to re-sign him. So maybe you give him a chance. You know, Seth Curry to me is, I'm going to be mentioning him a lot on this podcast. He's a guy who really interests me, coming after a stress fracture in his leg last year. You know, he's going to be cheap probably because of the injury. Joe Johnson wouldn't be a bad veteran presence, I think.
He's killed him before in the playoffs before too.
Yeah. Jeff Green, if you wanted to go small ball, but you know, it's just tough. Cause like you said, the salary cap is so small. The margins, you know, you don't have a lot of room to operate. Luca Balamute, I think he could be a solid guy. But again, you know, any free agency signing can only come after they move someone.
Exactly.
For the most part.
Pretty much. I mean, unless they're trying to pay high luxury tax money, which I doubt they are, especially for this team. So now we're moving on to the Boston Celtics. You know, a very nice season for the Celtics, 55-27. Very impressive because Kyrie Irving missed a big chunk of the season, and Gordon Hayward obviously went down a few minutes in the first game of the season, and they still were able to get the second seed in the Eastern Conference, went all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals, lost in seven to the Cavs in a series that, honestly, they could have probably won.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, you can make the case they were probably the better team, but the Cavs, again, had the best player. They were great all year. Like you said, the abundance of injuries between Gordon Hayward going down. Marcus Smart had several nagging injuries throughout the season. Kyrie Irving obviously ended up missing the end of the season. I believe even Marcus Morris got banged up for a little bit. Daniel Tice, right? He tore his ACL the end of the year or whatever. These guys were just, you know, they're resilient. Everybody stepped up. Jason Tatum had a tremendous rookie campaign. Obviously, he's going to finish probably third in rookie of the year voting. But, I mean, it doesn't take away from how good he was. It's just like the draft class being so good. Jaylen Brown elevated his game. Al Horford was, you know, Mr. Reliable, Mr. Consistent. It was a really good year for the Celtics. Obviously, you don't like to lose when you're up 3-2 with a chance to go to the NBA Finals. But, I mean, realistically, this team was playing with house money all year. And, you know, the future looks really bright for Boston.
Yeah, like you said, it looks very bright. You know, the injuries were in a way a blessing in disguise because Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown really grew this postseason. You know, they had some remarkable games. It's very impressive. And, you know, Celtics fans got to be happy looking forward into their future, not only because of the players they have, just some of the assets, the picks they have, and the cap room moving forward. Looking at that cap situation, they only have $104 million guaranteed on the books. Obviously, they have Marcus Smart's contract to worry about. They have some non-guaranteed contracts they have to decide on. So they easily can be over the, you know, well over the cap. But in this situation, they can be flexible and make some moves if necessary.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're projected to have no cap space. you know, Gordon Hayward, Al Horford, and Kyrie Irving dominate a lot of the money. But like you said, there's moves that can be made. I mean, you know, Marcus Morris, for example, $5.3 million next year. Jaylen Brown, $5.1 million next year. Not that they're going to move those guys, but they can. They do have some wiggle room. Obviously, they're not going to bring back Greg Monroe, which I don't see them bringing back Greg Monroe. Aaron Baines, they could bring him back, but again, you know, it depends on how much he's going to demand. Shane Larkin probably gone. The biggest question mark is how they handled the Marcus Smart situation, because obviously he's a restricted free agent. Excuse me, he's a restricted free agent, so they can match whatever he's getting. He also has full bird rights, but you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess we're probably gonna talk about that, but you know, is Marcus Smart the biggest cap question mark for the Celtics?
Yeah, I think so. You know, looking at it right now, that's going to be the number that really matters. And like you said, they're over the cap. They have quite amount of room before the tax line. So they have the flexibility if they wanted to make a big trade, like you mentioned, moving a Marcus Morris contract or somebody else, trying to get another big fish because they've been tied to Kawhi. You know, they've been tied to AD, but it doesn't look like he's going to get moved anytime soon. So I think there is a lot of possibilities. And there's just like they could even move. I know it would be, you know, wouldn't be the best look. They could move Gordon Hayward. They could move Al Horford if there was like a really big fish they wanted to make a move. even, you know, the rumor just popped out yesterday, they're unsure if they can re-sign Kyrie Irving in 2019. So I think there's a lot of moves on the table that we just don't even know about. But moving on to team needs, you know, I think personally an athletic big might help them, somebody off the bench with some nice athleticism, you know, kind of coming in there for a guy like Tristan Thompson or somebody just like that. You know, you talked about Aaron Baines maybe not being back, having another guy that can play center, a little bit of a rim runner, somebody not like a Greg Monroe, maybe somebody more so.
You know who I'm thinking of? I'll just Nerlens Noel.
Honestly, yeah, oh, perfect.
He hasn't played much. He's probably going to be cheap too, which is something the Celtics might be interested in. But he's still young, and it's just been the issue with the work ethic. But him, or even a guy like Montrezl Harrell, I know he's a little bit undersized, but he can play a small ball five in the new NBA. And he looked really good with the Clippers the second half of last year. But to me, those are two guys that especially I think would address the issues you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. Perfect, Corey. And I think also a veteran backup point guard might help, you know, especially if Kyrie's Irving knee is a question, you know, having a guy that can kind of steady the ship. Shane Larkin did a solid job when healthy, but I think if they had a veteran or maybe even some type of winner, a guy that's proven and knows won championships, I think that would help the squad too. What about you for team needs?
For me, it's the same. I think they need some front court help. Definitely. You know, Al Horford, I love Al Horford, but, you know, they lose a lot of rebounding when he's on the floor playing small ball center, and he's just not as athletic. Obviously, you know, unless you trade Al Horford, which I don't think they're going to do, and I wouldn't trade Al Horford. But I agree. I would go after, like, a Montrezl Harrell or Nerlens Noel, as my notes kind of gave away. I think those two guys could help them in that issue. But also, I like the thought of, like what you said, them going after a veteran point guard. Obviously, I don't think San Antonio lets Tony Parker walk. Maybe, like, if Tony Parker is a free agent or something like that, he's on the backside of his career. He didn't play a lot this year. He clearly lost a step. He's a little bit he's banged up for a lot of the year, too, with a quad injury. But maybe a guy like him they can bring in to address that veteran point guard hole they have.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing. And there has been talk about Tony Parker possibly leaving San Antonio. And I know some Celtics fans listening will be like, well, they have Daniel Tice. He's pretty athletic big. But he tore his ACL very late in the season. There's a good chance he's going to miss most of next season. Talking about team free agents, you kind of hinted at already. Marcus Smart is obviously the big fish, the restricted free agent. They have a couple guys they signed at the end of the year, Jonathan Gibson, Jabari Bird. They're not really that important in terms of their long-term plans. Aaron Baines, unrestricted. Greg Monroe, Shane Larkin, unrestricted. Let's start with Marcus Smart, though. What do you think is going to happen with this situation? Is somebody going to come and offer them a contract they can match, or are they going to be able to work with Smart and find something that works for both parties?
I do not see him back in Boston next year. He's even said in some press conferences that he wants, you know, that max money. He wants the most money possible. He's not interested in taking a discount. He wants money. So the fact of the matter is, somebody out there, you know, I'm not sure who yet, will offer him not a max deal, but a lot of money for Marcus Smart, a guy who, as we know, is polarizing offensively. Defensively, he's a stud, but offensively, you know, well, we saw him shoot, you know, 50% in one game in the Eastern Conference Finals, and he shot, you know, 18% the next game. You just don't know what you're getting with him. He's a complete spark plug. But there is going to be a team that goes after him, and I don't think the Celtics are going to be in any position to want to match.
Yeah, no, I think I agree. I think there is a situation where the Celtics are able to keep him. Maybe they offer him the money in terms of thinking they're going to maybe move Rozier or move Smart down the line. But I think looking at Marcus Smart, it attracts both types of teams. He attracts, you know, a contender where they want to add a guy that can give them that energy boost, that glue guy. Like you said, defensively, he makes plays. Offensively, his numbers do suck, but he still just, like, provides a spark to the offense. Sometimes it's playmaking, just making cuts and stuff. He's just one of those guys where you can't necessarily explain statistically. And then you look at it as a, you know, a bad team. Maybe they want to bring in a Marcus Smart type because they want to set the tone. They want to set the culture. And they'll have the money to offer him. And they're like, all right, we want a guy. And to Marcus Smart's defense, asking for the money, he does leave it all on the floor. You know what I mean? Like, every game he plays, he's willing to dive. He'll go at it. He doesn't really take a play off. So I think that's very impressive. And I understand why he wants the money. But from the Celtics' perspective, it'd be hard to give him a lot of change, especially when you have those big contracts we mentioned with Hayward, Horford, Irving. And then looking down the line, obviously, this is way down the line, but you have to worry about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, and you mentioned Rozier. You know, Rozier was a stud, you know, Scary Terry. He's been one of those guys who's been attached to so many trade rumors, and Danny Ainge is like, no, you know, I'm not trading this kid. And we got to see this year why Danny Ainge is like, no, I'm not trading this kid. And I think, You know, if Rozier didn't play as well as he did in the playoffs, then maybe we're talking a little bit differently about the Marcus Smart situation. But I think because of how Rozier played, and, you know, obviously he didn't play well in Game 7, but we saw how he played in Game 6, you know, seeing that kind of potential for a guy who finally got some big-time hits this season, I don't think it's any question that you go forward with the guy who's cheaper.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think there's a good possibility we see one of those, if they do re-sign Smart, there's a possibility we see one of those guys move next year, you know, in this up or even in this upcoming offseason. Talking about Aaron Baines, do you think he's back? You know, he did play some solid minutes. I'm not a big Aaron Baines fan, but he had a very good season for the Celtics. Defensively, he made a great impact just being that big body in the paint.
Well, I think what it comes down to is he willing to leave money on the table? Because, you know, I mean, I'm sure they – what can they offer him, Max? They can offer him, like, what, $5 million, $6 million, $5
million? Yeah, depending on how they, you know, work the cap in different situations. Like I mentioned, they have some unguaranteed contracts, so they could always let some guys go. They could use the mid-level exception on him if they wanted to, right, or part of it. So it's tough to say. I mean, they have the money to definitely keep Baines if they want, if that's the guy they want to keep. But like you said, he'll probably have to leave money on the table, because if I'm the Celtics, I'm looking at flexibility. You know, I don't want to lock up Baines long-term. But if he wants to sign another one-year deal on a decent number for himself, that's fine. But if he wants to go two or three down the line when I have to worry about big contract coming up for other guys, I'm going to probably pass.
Right. And realistically, if he decides to leave money on the table, it's easier when you're looking at, like, for example, we've seen like Iggy leave money on the table to stay with the Warriors. You know, David West went there for the veteran minimum. When you're on a team that you know is going to be competing for a title, guys are more okay with leaving money. Yeah. We saw LeBron make $16 million a year in Miami to win, you know, two titles. So I think if Aaron Baines realizes what he's around and what he could possibly be a part of, then if he brings that to Danny Ainge and them and says, you know, I'm okay with this, like, just I want to be here in Boston, then I think without question he's going to be back in Boston. Because yeah. And also Celtic fans in general, I feel like they love Baines. They have like an irrational love for him, kind of like how Pacer fans do for Lance Stephenson. He's just like a bully. He plays 20 minutes, but the guys just love his hustle.
And he's knocked down a couple corner threes in the postseason. I don't know if that's something that's going to stay, but if it
does. Through two rounds, he was the best three-point shooter on the team.
Yeah, and I mean, it happens in one game, you're like, all right, that's kind of lucky. But it happened in a couple games. If that's something he can just add, a corner three is pretty big and giving the offense a lot more room. But talking about Greg Monroe, you know, they picked him up midseason. That didn't really work out. I doubt they bring back Greg Monroe. What do you think?
No way. You know, obviously, it's unfortunate. Greg Monroe, I actually think, is a solid basketball player. Offensively, he can really score at ease, decent rebounding. We saw him have a 20-20 game while he was with the Celtics. But again, you know, the lack of defense, he became unplayable, and we didn't even see him in the playoffs, really.
He's just so slow. You know what I mean? He's just slow, and when you have other slow players on the team, you don't really want to have him around. And offensively, just giving him post touches, I don't think really works in this NBA, especially for the way the Celtics have it set up. So I agree. Not really a big fan of bringing him back. Shane Larkin's an interesting guy. I think at the very least, you know, they consider bringing him back because he did play some good minutes. I would like to see what happens with Larkin. I wonder if any other NBA teams were interested in him, because if you recall, the prior season he played, I want to say, in China.
Yeah. I mean, he played minutes in the playoffs too, if I recall.
Yeah,
he played a lot. I think he got banged up.
Yeah, he got hurt.
Right. He had a buzzer beater three-pointer, I believe, to end one half against the Bucks. But yeah, you know, he plays hard. Another guy who, not to the same degree as Marcus Smart, but he's a guy who gives up his body for the ball. He understands that in the minutes he's given, because of obviously the journey he's had so far in the NBA, what he's been with the Nets,
the Knicks,
China,
Mavericks.
Right, so he's been bouncing around, but he takes advantage of the minutes he's given. He plays hard. I wouldn't be surprised if he is picked up somewhere as a third point guard option. I'm still not positive he'll be back with the Celtics, but again, you know, if they don't sign Marcus Smart, you know, it wouldn't hurt to have a Shane Larkin, because obviously, as we know, Kyrie Irving does have a history to get kind of banged up. But again, I think I would lean towards, like you mentioned, a veteran backup point guard if I'm not gonna bring back Marcus Smart.
Yeah, no, I think that's a possibility as well. I think It's a hard to really gauge Shane Larkin's value in the NBA. Are other teams interested? Is he a guy that you might be able to give a training camp invite and maybe kind of keep him on your roster that way and let him compete for the spot? But talking about trades, the Celtics might be one of the most interesting teams in the league when it comes to trades because of the assets they have. You know, they have the 2019 Clippers first-round pick protected 1 through 14 and then protected 1 through 14 the next year as well. They have Memphis's 2019 first-round pick protected 1 through 8 and then protected 1 through 6 the next year. And then they also have Sacramento's 2019 pick of next year in the case that it's the better pick between the Sixers, which it will be, with no protections. And like we mentioned, they have plenty of movable contracts. They have cap flexibility because they are under the tax. You know, this team could make a blockbuster type trade and add to, and they have, you know, two great pieces. I think at this point, Jason Tatum is probably untouchable, but Jaylen Brown is probably movable. There's been some talk about them possibly moving up to the fifth spot with the Mavericks. Obviously, the ties to Kawhi Leonard. I mean, what type of big time trades do you think are on the table for the Celtics this offseason?
Well, I mean, we gotta talk about the one guy they're tied to the most recently, which is Kawhi. I definitely think there is a chance the Celtics could do something crazy. I mean, Kyrie Irving didn't, you know, I don't know if you heard the comments that Kyrie Irving had yesterday, but, you know, he didn't sound like a guy who's necessarily interested in re-signing when his deal's up. You know, he kind of left it as a, we'll handle that when we get there. But again, you know, when you see a team constructed like it is now and with everything that the Celtics have going for them, it's strange to me that a guy would not say like, oh, I definitely want to be here as they're building to the future. Instead, he's candid and almost unsure. So, you know, again, if Kyrie's not going to stay and he's going to walk, then Kyrie Irving to me becomes expendable. And if Kawhi Leonard is unhappy in San Antonio, you know, I'm sure Popovich would love to have a Kyrie Irving and possibly a Jaylen Brown, or a Kyrie Irving, maybe even not a Kyrie Irving or a Gordon Hayward, but there's definitely scenarios out there I think that could draw a Kawhi Leonard and Celtics trade talk.
Yeah, I think honestly, any trade that's available in the NBA right now, the Celtics can make that trade. There's not a player that they probably can't really trade for with the assets they have. It's all in the matter of what Danny Ainge wants to give up. And talking about the picks, 2019 is pretty much, I want to say, their last year of having a ton of assets. You know, they might have a couple moving forward, but this is their big year in terms of picks. You know, they can move them for next year, and they could really make another splash move. I mean, looking at this roster, if nothing changed, they're still probably maybe the best team in the Eastern Conference and a good chance of going to the NBA Finals. And actually, you know, I think, I don't want to say beating the Warriors, but this team could compete with the Warriors if they're fully healthy. We've yet to see them fully healthy, but just looking at a starting lineup of a Kyrie Irving, a Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, Al Horford type, I mean, that's one of the best starting lineups we've seen in the NBA this season.
No, for sure. I mean, the possibilities are really good for the Celtics. And I love just that lineup in general. You know, Kyrie Irving, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, Tatum and Al Horford. I mean, that's a really good small ball five lineup in today's NBA. But again, you know, is that what they want to do? Do they want to have that many wings? But yeah, it looks good for the Celtics right now still.
I thoroughly enjoy that lineup. The switchability is amazing. Other than Kyrie, you can pretty much switch 2 through 5 almost on anything. You know, there's not a ton of centers in this league that are make you pay. And one of the centers that does make you pay is banged up right now in DeMarcus Cousins. So looking at the Celtics roster, and not to even mention some of the younger guys they have, like Semi Ojeleye played some nice minutes, and then we talked about Marcus Smart coming back. Marcus Morris is a nice piece on the bench. You know, they could literally decide to make an explosion-type trade, or they could do nothing, and they'd still be in great position. So the Celtics are in a great position, mostly thanks to Billy King and the Nets. But talking about free agent targets, who are you looking at for the Celtics? I know you already mentioned Nerlens Noel. Anybody else you think is a possibility?
Like I said, I think Harrell has a possibility. But then, you know, if you lose a Marcus Smart, then maybe you go after a Tony Parker. I'm not sure how much Seth Curry. I think Seth Curry's an interesting free agent to me.
Yeah,
he missed all of last year because of a stress fracture, so we know his value is going to be down. We know he's a 3-point shooter. I'm not sure what kind of money he's going to demand, but you know, he only made $3 million last year, and he was hurt all last year. So I don't know if he gets much more than that. So maybe he's a guy they target. I know if they wanted some veterans, maybe they go after a Joe Johnson. I don't think he'll be getting much money anymore. Probably a veteran minimum at this point. Just smaller guys. There's no big time, you know, player out there, obviously, on the free agency for the Celtics because they already have three. But they're just small moves like that to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, like you said, Noel Harrell. Harrell will be interesting. I think the Clippers want to keep him, and he's a restricted free agent. Maybe somebody like a Derek Favors, possibly. Obviously, all these moves are going to take some cap movement or some player, you know, trade, sign, trade type thing. Tyreke Evans is a guy they had interest in last year at the trade deadline. That's a guy I'd probably consider. Trevor Booker, I think, wouldn't be a bad pickup, especially if you're looking for an athletic big off the bench. And like you said, Seth Curry, I really like that. There's just a ton of options because Brad Stevens does a great job incorporating whoever he wants in the lineup in the roster. And I think they could kind of work with a whole bunch of different guys.
Ooh, just thought about this too. Maybe a Balamute.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love Balamute.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if they don't bring back Smart, they maybe trade Marcus Morris and they get a Balamute. You know, he can play that stretch four kind of position and he gives them some defense and length. I think that's what the Celtics should do. They should move towards just getting this length. You know, they struggle with rebounding, but if you have a lineup where you got, you know, basically three wings out there, I like your chances.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you get some length, some, you know, some size possibly. Even somebody like a Dwayne Dedman, if he became a free agent, he has a player option. That's a guy I'd probably consider. Yeah. You know, even like Jeff Green, I know he's been terrible. Ed Davis is a guy that I actually would really like on the Celtics team. I think he'd probably come at a cheap contract, gives you rebounding, some toughness down low, and he's a lot more athletic than Aaron Baines, or you could keep both. You know, there's a lot of options for the Celtics teams, and honestly, I'm kind of jealous that they have so many assets, so much flexibility, and they're going to be a really good team for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, the Celtics fans have been spoiled the last decade or so.
And like I said, that's a big thanks to Billy King and the Nets for giving them all those draft assets. If they never do, they never do that. I mean, the Celtics are still in a good position, but they're not in an amazing position that they are in now. So they've done a great job of being able to compete while still adding to the roster, keeping flexibility, and having that internal youth as a possibility too. Because like we said, if they stay pat, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are going to get better. Terry Rozier is probably going to get better too. So the only big issue they have to worry about is, like you hinted at, is the Kyrie Irving thing. No, is he going to re-sign in 2019? Is he going to pick up his player option? Is he going to re-sign? Is he going to look for that big deal? There's been rumors of him wanting to go to the Knicks. Do you work a deal with the Knicks? Maybe you try to get Porzingis and you send them Kyrie Irving and something back. I mean, the moves on the table for the Celtics are unlimited.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I saw some people who were like, you know, you don't trade Kyrie Irving. You just traded for Kyrie Irving. Well, you traded pretty much a string and a button for Kyrie Irving with how it turned out Isaiah Thomas was this year and Jay Crowder. You didn't really give up much for Kyrie Irving besides the number 8 pick of the draft, which, again, could end up being, you know, not a good pick depending on who selected and how his career develops. And then you still have Kyrie Irving, who's now an asset you could flip again for even more assets if you wanted to. So I think either way, however the Kyrie Irving situation pans out, whether he stays there long term or they have to trade him, either way, the Celtics made out in the initial trade for Kyrie Irving.
And again, that 8th pick that they trade, it's not even their pick. So it's like, you know, they're just right in an amazing situation. Moving on to another team that's in a great situation as well. They did it a completely different way. They didn't get any type of luck. They just lost a lot of games, got a lot of high first-round picks, kept flexibility around them. That's the Sixers, 52-30. I believe they had the biggest jumps in win total in the NBA season last year, which is very impressive. Obviously, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid looked like future stars. They'd killed expectations. You know, the only thing I think you'd look at them and you'd say they looked young in the postseason at times. You know, they probably were better than the Celtics team, but they got beat by them in 5.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. This was a team that they didn't know how to win yet. Obviously, they beat the Miami Heat in some contested games in the first round, but again, that Heat team wasn't very good. And then they just got out-coached for the most part. You know, the Celtics were the more disciplined team. The Sixers got a little bit sloppy at times, especially in that one game they lost in overtime. They got sloppy near the end. I think Redick had a couple of turnovers and Ben Simmons, just lazy bounce passes. But, yeah, the future is good, and we saw the process in action. I mean, Embiid looks like he's going to be a stud for years to come. Ben Simmons is going to be Rookie of the Year, and, you know, if he develops any type of jump shot again, he's going to be ferocious. Dario Saric being on that rookie deal. I believe he's going to be locked up, and he showed a lot of promise. Covington, although he's extremely streaky, you know, his contract's going to get less now. He made $16 million this year, and he's going to be making just $10 million next year, which is really beneficial when you got big fish free agents out there.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, not saying they want to move Covington, but that's a guy that they could possibly move as well in a bigger trade and kind of help them out. And not to mention their first-round pick, the number one overall pick, Markelle Fultz, didn't even play. You know, he played, but he's played sparingly, and he wasn't obviously 100%. He quote-unquote forgot how to shoot the basketball. So, I mean, the one really negative when you look at this team is this whole Brian Colangelo burner account situation. And obviously, they just parted ways, and that's going to have an impact. But I think Brett Brown is now in charge temporarily of basketball operations, which isn't terrible because Brett Brown, I think, is a well-liked guy around the league. And then he said, as he mentioned, you know, I'm going to sit down with Simmons and Joel Embiid in any meeting with a free agent. And I think that speaks enough. How do you think the Colangelo thing will impact the Sixers, though?
I think it's just one of those things. It happened. It sucks that it happened to the franchise because that kind of negligence and gross incompetence is never good. Even if it's his wife or whatever the case may be, obviously they parted ways. It is nice terms for we're going to let you resign before we fire your ass. So we know what really happened. But I don't think it seriously impacts it because I think if, like, for example, LeBron James, if he wants to go to Philly, he wants to go to Philly because of Embiid and Ben Simmons, not because of Colangelo.
So, yeah. If anything, it's a blessing in disguise because Colangelo was rumored to make some, you know, possibly bad moves. If, you know, he wanted to get rid of Brett Brown and sign Mike D'Antoni, if D'Antoni didn't sign with Houston, or, you know, some of the moves he's made weren't necessarily amazing. So I think Sam Hinkie, it's still his team technically, you know, in terms of like who put the roster together. And I think, you know, moving forward, like you said, I don't think it'll really matter if they have their GM. If they do get a guy like David Griffin, who is well-liked by LeBron and, you know, liked by others around the league and just seems to know what he's doing, and he's known to be a good communicator and one of the reasons they were able to keep Kyrie so long in Cleveland, I think that'd be huge. But that's for another day. Looking at their cap situation, it's a pretty cap situation. You know, they only have $67 million guaranteed on next year. Obviously, TJ McConnell and Raquan Holmes are on team options. They'll probably get picked up. So still, you know, a good chunk of cap space moving forward. You know, they will have the first-round pick cap holds, but they could move somebody, like you mentioned. You know, Covington could possibly move. Jared Bayless is definitely a guy they'll be looking to move. If they had to move Dario Saric, I think they would too, just to free up any type of cap space to open up another, you know, more room to sign a big fish. But they could easily make room to sign a max player type free agency with this cap.
Yeah, I mean, their maximum cap space for this offseason is 31 and 100 million, or 31 million basically, whatever. So that's their maximum possible cap space. They're projected to have just $23.5 million. But again, you know, like you said, you make some moves. Like, they have a lot of friendly contracts. Robert Covington could be on his way out. I mean, you know, Amir Johnson's a free agent. You're not going to bring him back. I think J.J. Redick, it sounds like he wants to come back. There is no way in hell I bring him back for $23 million. You know, that was kind of like a congratulations kind of contract for me. I wouldn't pay him anything more than, I think, $14-15 million going forward. And that's no discredit to J.J. Redick. I love his game. He does what he does perfectly, running off screens and shooting threes. But he, to me, is not a $23 million player. But like you said, they have the opportunity to go after a big fish, whether that be, you know, a LeBron James or a Paul George. They definitely have the ability to do that. And, you know, if you're a Philly fan, I believe they have interest in going after LeBron, obviously, and we saw last night after the game, Embiid was already tweeting to come to him. They have their draft picks, too, for this year. In 2 weeks, you know, they have their own, and they have the Lakers draft pick, right?
Yes, they have the Lakers draft pick.
Either the Suns, right, okay.
Which, you know, was projected to be a lot higher, but the Lakers stepped up and made that pick not as, you know, likable.
Right. But still, you know, all the same, they got two first-round picks. They have two or three second-round picks. So there's players that they could package with these draft picks.
A likely scenario in terms of trades, I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to pair number 26 with Jared Bayless and got a kind of a salary dump because they open up some more space in that aspect. And like you said, you know, plenty of opportunities to go for the big fish. What are team needs for the Sixers moving forward?
Guards, three-point shooters. You mentioned Jared Bayless. He sucks. And yeah. I know Sixers fans hate him and the fact that he's going to be making $8.5 million next year is something they want to definitely get rid of. Dario Saric, perfectly fine with him. Justin Anderson, he's making, dirt next year for the most part, McConnell and all those guys. But, there's still a lack of three-point shooting. I think the best way to utilize Ben Simmons and Embiid is to surround them with shooters. And obviously we've seen that, they went out and they got Marco Bellinelli, Ersan Ilyasova, who's not a marksman by any means, but he's a solid shooter, JJ and Covington. I think for them, it's just about, making a couple of moves and then just, getting a stockpile of shooters.
Yeah. Well, for me, what I have down is, add the other star. I think this is an opportunity to add the other star. If that's via free agency with Paul George or LeBron, you do it. Or if it's making a bigger move for Kawhi Leonard. Obviously, like we mentioned, they still have multiple first-round picks in this draft. They have Markelle Fultz. They have Covington who they can move. And also, any type of 3-and-D type player. It doesn't even have to be a guard because I think they're willing to play interchangeable basketball where they literally play, Ben Simmons at point guard and they have other wings playing 3-and-D, guys like a Trevor Ariza or somebody like that, or even bringing in somebody like a Will Barton who's not necessarily a good defender, but he can get you some buckets on the wing when necessary. I think, just looking at filling out the roster, get those complementary players for your big-time stars or add another big-time star in itself. Trade-wise, what are you thinking for the Sixers?
You mentioned it. Kawhi Leonard is going to be a target. He might be one of their top targets. LeBron's a little bit older. Paul George doesn't look like he wants to come back east. But for sure, Kawhi Leonard, if he's available, like you mentioned, between Markelle Fultz, even if you wanted, I would hate to see it, but if you package Dario Saric or a Covington with a Markelle Fultz and a couple draft picks, maybe you can get a Kawhi Leonard in. Maybe that's enough to push the needle. But then, if you think about it, a tandem of, J.J. Redick, Kawhi Leonard, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, that's a team that can run a conference for years to come.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Redick.
And also
– Oh, go ahead, Corey.
Sorry, that's why I was one more point. Also, who knows? They may do a sign-in trade, let's say the LeBron James scenario. If they want to bring in LeBron James and, the Cavs – and LeBron doesn't want to completely destroy the Cavs. Maybe they do a sign and trade in which, a Markelle Fultz or somebody gets moved over to Cleveland for LeBron James coming over. I'm not sure how I have to look into that further with cap space and everything else, but that's another possibility, or maybe even a Paul George sign and trade.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Or even if they send back a Covington, which I think in Cleveland's situation, they're looking to get any type of solid young player they can. Like we said, similar to the Celtics in a way, the trades are pretty unlimited because they have great assets. They have multiple first-round picks. They have some young players they can move. Obviously, the gauge on Fultz is very different from franchise to franchise, so that's another thing to keep an eye on. My mistake, we skipped over this as well. Team free agents, team options for TJ McConnell and Verquan Holmes. I think both those guys are going to be brought back. What are your thoughts?
I think you have to bring back McConnell for sure. He's low key like the heart and soul of that team to a degree. He's just like,
he's a grinder.
He's like the Rudy. When he hit a game winner, not last year, the year before, and he was jumping and fist pumping and Embiid's like yelling in his face. I have all those photos saved because they're just tremendous to me. But I definitely think they bring him back. Rashawn Holmes, he had some nice minutes throughout the season. Every time I saw him, he's a high energy guy. He's more of a power forward, but he can play a small ball five. I think McConnell is for sure bring back. Holmes is kind of a question mark, but I definitely think they offer Bellinelli a small deal in hopes he returns, and they definitely bring back JJ.
Yeah, for me, I think TJ and Holmes, it's almost a guarantee to bring them back. I think it would make not sense because, you're getting quality help at a young, a great price and a young piece. Both guys have 1.6 mil. You can't really beat that for bench help. Redick, Bellinelli, Amir Johnson, Ilyasova, there's some interesting things. I think obviously Amir Johnson, I don't think they care to bring him back. He did his job. Bellinelli, it's going to really depend on what type of offers he gets. Same thing for Ersan Ilyasova. The Sixers might want to keep that cap and sign a big fish and not, pick up one of these smaller guys. The Redick situation is very interesting. I can see a scenario where they don't bring Redick back because, they're using the money somewhere else and they have to elect to go with maybe a lesser guard and someone like a Wayne Ellington. Because of Redick's money and he just got paid so well last year, He's also a very well-liked player around the league, and a lot of teams would like to bring him in for his leadership, professionalism, and obviously a deadly three-point shooter is needed on almost every team.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know listening to the Ringer, the Bill Simmons podcast, that he said that, you know, J.J. Redick last offseason before signing with the Sixers, he was really close to signing with the Rockets. Like, he had a contract from the Rockets and from the Sixers, and the Sixers called him basically and said, you know, you got 20 minutes to accept this offer or we're pulling it. So he ended up going with the Sixers. But, you know, he was really close to joining J.J. Redick or joining Chris Paul in Houston.
Yeah, and also there was a lot of talk about him possibly signing with Brooklyn as well. I know he mentioned that on a podcast at the beginning of the year. They didn't offer him as quite as much money or obviously the competitiveness, but they offered him more of a long-term contract. He does have, I believe, an apartment in Brooklyn as well. So, but moving on from there, Corey, let's talk targets. Where are the Sixers going to target in free agency? Everywhere.
Yeah, they're going to – their top two targets are LeBron James and Paul George. And you can follow that up by, I mean, maybe they have interest in a Tyreke Evans or possibly a Jabari Parker, maybe a Trevor Ariza if they want to go with some more veterans, which I personally wouldn't mind seeing them get a guy like Trevor Ariza just for the simple fact that he can bring in more of a veteran presence. Yeah, but for me, maybe a Wayne Ellington too for three-point shooting if they can't get a Bellinelli. But for me, those are like the top five guys for me.
Yeah, I think you look at obviously LeBron and Paul George. You can make that happen. You start looking at other role players around the league. You know, is that Trevor Ariza? You know, like I mentioned, Will Barton being a possibility. I think Avery Bradley's a guy whose value's not super high but could help this team. Marcus Smart would actually even be an interesting piece. I don't know if they want to pay the money to a guy like that. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Rodney Hood. You know, Wayne Ellington and even my guy Joe Harris, I think if they lose Redick, they're going to need to replace that three-point shooting with either an Ellington or a Harris-type player, and they'll be at a lesser price.
Yeah, I mean, hell, if they miss out on a big fish and they don't bring back Redick, they could probably get Ellington and Joe Harris if they really wanted to.
Yeah, especially if they miss out on – if they decide they don't want to go with Mark
Bellinelli.
Yeah, so right. I think there's a lot of options for the Sixers in free agency. There's not many guys they – can add, and the roster isn't completely filled out. They just have the two big stars in Embiid and Simmons, which really can, you know, open up things in terms of also attracting other players, getting them to maybe take a lesser, you know, pay cut, because the Sixers team could be in the championship or in the Eastern Conference Finals for the next 5 years as well. I think we're going to see a lot of Boston and Philly moving forward.
I think, as Brett Brown said, this is when after they lost game five, he said, you know, this is the team we're going to have to go through. This is the team. And I think that's right on, especially depending on where LeBron James goes and what happens with that. We very well may see, Celtics, Sixers in the Eastern Conference Finals for the next, you know, 3-4 years possibly.
Moving on from the Sixers, you know, talking about the New York teams, first we'll start with the Knicks. You know, season looked pretty good moving forward early in the year. They were winning some games. Actually, they started the season, I want to say, 0-5, and then they went on a nice winning stretch. Porzingis was playing great. People were talking about possibly MVP-type candidate. They cooled off. Porzingis tore his ACL. Then from that point on, there really wasn't much bright spots on the team. Trey Burke maybe might have been the brightest spot, but other than that, you know, on the Knicks squad, things looked pretty negative.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. You know, the Porzingis came out the gates on fire, looked good, just like he kind of did in the first half of his rookie campaign, and he kind of started to slow down, and of course, he started with the ACL injury. And then the other guys, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. too had a nice stretch, then he got hurt, and then he kind of was up and down. And it's, I guess, like, when I think about the Knicks from this past year, the thing that sticks out the most is just Cantor going at LeBron, which is so strange to me. But that's, like, the one thing I associate with the Knicks this year. And, of course, Joakim Noah and Hornacek pushing each other in practice, which is not good that those are the two shining moments for the Knicks in my mind this year. But like you said, you know, somewhat disappointing season. This is right around where a lot of people expect them to be, though. Just mid-level disappointment. Trey Burke definitely had a good year. Wouldn't be surprised if we see him in New York again next year. But, the Knicks are still a fumbling, bumbling team. You know, it doesn't seem like they can get out of their own way at times.
Yeah, I believe since the year 2000, no team has more losses in the NBA than the New York Knicks. Obviously, Jeff Hornacek out, David Fizdale in. He'll try to change some things. In terms of the Knicks cap situation, it's very interesting. You know, they're under the cap. And a lot of that will change, though, if Enes Kanter decides to opt into his player option. Same thing with Kyle O'Quinn. Enes Kanter, 18.6, and Kyle O'Quinn, 4.2. If those guys opt out, then Knicks have plenty of cap space and they can make a nice move. If those guys opt in, they'll be right at the cap line and they'll pretty much have the mid-level exception. Nothing really else to do.
Well, would you leave $18.5 million on the table, Nick?
No, I probably wouldn't. But their one thing that could help Enes Kanter is help the Knicks is that they might offer him a long-term deal. If they can negotiate prior and be like, all right, Kanter, we're going to take you off the books and they won't have his bird. Oh, actually, I think they will have his bird rights because he was acquired in a trade. So they would be able maybe to, you know, kind of negotiate with him and be like, all right, we'll sign you after we sign someone else. But in terms of big-time free agents, I don't think they're going to sign any huge fish anyway. So I think in the cap situation, you know, it's not pretty, but it's not terrible. I think maybe even if Enes Kanter decided to opt out and sign somewhere else, use that money to take on a salary dump and try to move forward with that. I don't think for the Knicks that the salary cap's that important right now because of you want to keep flexibility with Porzingis being injured. And you already have your, you know, your books locked up with that ugly Joakim Noah contract. Tim Hardaway's contract isn't terrible. It's a little bit high. Courtney Lee, you know, he's probably lived kind of up to the contract. Lance Thomas' contract, though, is not pretty.
Now, the Joakim Noah contract is nightmarish. Courtney Lee's is okay because I feel like Courtney Lee's contract is still very tradable and there's still a lot of people who could use a Courtney Lee. But then, like you said, Lance Thomas, that was another bad deal.
And it sucks for Thomas because, you know, he was a solid player and then injuries just really killed him. And Lee, like we said, is a little overplayed, but he's, you know, at least plays hard and plays the right way. Also, you know, and this is no offense to Ron Baker, it also hurts to get Ron Baker picked up his player option for 4.5 this year. And not saying that he's a terrible player, but you don't want to play a guy like that 4.5 mil.
So, well, that was one of the deals that we laughed at, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They gave him a lot of money last year for playing hard, basically.
And it's not like he's a terrible player that you wouldn't want to have around, but you could definitely have him at half the price. You know, it's not like people are like, Ron Baker, we're going to need to sign him in free agency. But team needs, what do you think the Knicks need to add to the squad?
Well, I mean, it depends on how Frank develops, but I mean, I would like to see a point guard because between Ron Baker, Frank, I don't want to pronounce his last name, Nick,
Frank Ntilikina,
Ntilikina, yeah, Emmanuel Mudiay, like those three point guards to me, I think two of the three don't have much chance of being anything in the NBA, and then one for me, to me, I don't see him as much more than a six man, and Ntilikina. Nicotina, Frank, whatever. Frank the Tank.
Frank.
yeah. For me, I think they need a point guard, a veteran, a guy who can really, you know, kind of help Porzingis, give Porzingis some more easy looks. So you got to think, Porzingis has been this successful without a true point guard. You know, he's had a, you know, crapshoot, if you will. So, and I mean, there's a ton of point guards on this roster just that just don't have a lot of creating ability. At least they haven't shown it yet. So I think a point guard position to me, and then maybe a wing.
Yeah, I think for me, I think the Knicks are in a situation where they just need to add young talent. You know, wherever that is, whatever position that is, I think you can move Porzingis between the four and the five. So if it's a four, you add it. If it's a five, you add it. You mentioned the guards. I think this is like a tryout year for the guards. You know, Mudiay, Frank obviously is young, so I think you have a longer leash for him. But Mudiay, this is kind of a make or break season probably for his NBA career in general. Ron Baker, like we mentioned, you know, we kind of know what Ron Baker is. Trey Burke, I think this is an interesting year for him too. And, you know, the Knicks will probably bring him back. He's only on a non-guaranteed 1.79 mil contract. So see if he can do it again this year. He had some really nice efficient numbers for a guy that was bouncing around the league, was in the G League, and then got called up. So I think just young talent, you know, best player available situation in terms of free agency. If you can add some guys under 25 that fit the same timeline as Porzingis, you do it. You don't want to, I don't think you want to add any veterans because you don't want to get caught up in that mentality of New York that happens where you just think that you need to win, where Phil Jackson did a few years ago when he got Robin Lopez, Aaron Aflalo, and things like, and Joakim Noah, or no, he didn't get Joakim Noah then. He got Aaron Aflalo, Robin Lopez, and things just really didn't work out. You don't want to get in a situation like that. You want to leave your flexibility and you want to add young players that can get better, not guys that are going to get worse and have to deal with their 18 mil on your books.
Yeah, I mean, they had a super team a couple of years ago with Derrick Rose and Melo and Porzingis.
Yeah,
the super team won them, I think, 28 or 32 games.
Yeah, and so exactly, you don't want to get caught up in that nonsense. But talking about free agents, not really a ton of big time free agents on this roster. Michael Beasley and Jaren Jack are probably the two biggest names. We talked about player options for Kyle Quinn and Enes Kanter, which both guys will probably take.
Yeah, I think Kanter comes back. I think Baker comes back. I even think Kylo Quinn may come back. Beasley, I think he'll get some more money elsewhere. Jaren Jack, I wouldn't re-sign him. And then Hicks and Quinn are on two-way deals, restricted free agents. I don't know what they want to do with that. Maybe they get those guys another two-way deal. But yeah, the free agents for the Knicks, you're just kind of praying that maybe Kanter opts out.
Yeah, and that's pretty much going to make or break their cap situation. If he opts out, that gives them a lot of cap room. They could possibly go at one of the restricted free agent guys, like an Aaron Gordon or a Jabari Parker type, having that type of cap space. And Jaren Jack's a guy we mentioned before. Some teams possibly need to add a veteran point guard. Not that Jaren Jack even needs to play, but he's a nice locker room guy to have on your roster just to keep everything, steady. But
For sure. I mean, and
oh, go
I
ahead,
was gonna say
Corey.
the positive is too now that they have David Fizdale. So, it's gonna be interesting to see what kind of guys he wants to bring in, because now that you have a change in head coach, it's the philosophy in the New York Knicks is going to change. So who knows if maybe a couple of these guys they learn, Fizdale tell them what he wants to do. Maybe they're not interested in running that and they go elsewhere.
Yeah, that too. And I think Fizdale's talked about wanting the tough guys, gritty guys, defensive versatility guys that can, defend multiple positions, play multiple positions, I think is important for him. But possible trades for the Knicks. What do you think could possibly happen? We talk maybe Courtney Lee, maybe if Kanter opts out, taking on a salary dump like a Kenneth Faried. There's been a lot of talk about the Nuggets moving him and giving up that 14th pick.
Yeah, so when you're looking at the Knicks, I think Courtney Lee is the one guy who for sure can be dealt, and there's an assortment of teams I believe that could use his services. When I look around, I think of teams that like struggled. So like maybe, and this is obviously a maybe, if the Knicks wanted to, they could go after a guy. They could go to the Portland Trailblazers, for example, a team that has had some issues creating offense outside of McCollum and Lillard. So maybe they go after Courtney Lee. Maybe they package, I don't know, Courtney Lee and Lance Thomas for Evan Turner. They get the bad contract to Evan Turner off the books. The Knicks can't afford to have Evan Turner. And then the Blazers get an upgrade in Courtney Lee, and then hopefully Lance Thomas gives them a little bit more. But it's just pretty much looking for Courtney Lee on teams that are not playoff, like teams that are like on the cusp of being, a high seeded playoff team.
Yeah, no, I could see that Courtney Lee being some nice, or moving him at the trade deadline. Like I said, if Kanter opts out, I think salary dumps would be a thing. Do something like a little bit like Brooklyn has done, taking in some more picks. This season's going to be pretty much a wash for the Knicks. Porzingis isn't going to play half the year. Most likely, there's a chance he might not play the whole season. With that happening, you just kind of try to do the best you can and try to make most of it and kind of get ready for the next season. So I think anything that helps you for the future and trade wise, you make that move. Targets. Who do you think they should target in free agency?
It's another one of those teams where like I don't I mean the issue is who I mean let's just say this too to Knicks fans listening. Who they target is not necessarily who they will get. New York is having a tough time bringing in star talent, but I think a couple guys that they may give a look. Let's see, we have so like let's see, there's a guy like Rudy Gay, Wilson Chandler. Those guys opt out possibly. If they wanted to get a more sturdy point guard, maybe they go after a Tony Parker, a guy who can kind of, he can show Porzingis how an offense is supposed to be run. He may be able to tutor a guy like Frank. Obviously, he wouldn't start for me. He'd come off the bench. But maybe a guy like Tony Parker can kind of lead these young point guards. I think a guy like Wayne Ellington has some intrigue to them. Rondo is another guy for me. I don't know if he comes back with the Pelicans. I'm assuming he does. But, I think Rondo is still a top floor general in this league, and another guy I think would be really beneficial for Porzingis to play alongside. Because for me, if I'm the Knicks, any free agents I'm looking at, it's about making Porzingis comfortable and showing him that we're trying to build around him.
Yeah, for me, I'm probably honestly going in a little bit opposite of direction. I'm going with all young guys. I don't think there's much value in adding a veteran at this point because I think Porzingis probably isn't going to play, and you need to just have him set up for guys that are going to be on his timeline. Noah, Nerlens Noel is a guy we talked about a lot on this pod already. Mario Hezonja, a guy maybe you can get lucky in. If they do have the cap space to go after restricted free agents, Dante Exum is a guy I would definitely consider. Clint Capella would be a guy I consider if they have that extra cap space if Cantor opts out. Even a Seth Curry type shooter. I think anything young wise, maybe even a Jabari Parker type. You know, I think you just want to add young talent to the squad. Veterans will help in a certain way, but I think this year with Porzingis probably not playing half the season at most, I don't think the Knicks should try to compete. I think it would be best of their bet to lose, and they have their pick next year, get another high pick, add Porzingis. Now you have a talented roster on Porzingis' timeline, and you moving forward, your team is set. Don't fall into the New York trap of trying to add veterans and trying to compete now, because I think you just need to just take the losses. You've already lost enough. What's it going to hurt to lose a little bit more?
It's a fair point.
You know, because I just think it's like constant for the Knicks to just kind of add players. So I think you just want to add talent, you know, make it so when Porzingis comes back, and there's so much question mark, and like you mentioned, David Fizdale being a new coach, you need to find players that fit his criteria. But moving on to my favorite team, the Brooklyn Nets, we're going to swap roles real quick, and Corey's going to take over for the Nets hosting portion.
Talking about the Brooklyn Nets, who finished 28-54. They showed a lot of strides. Nick, how was this season from your point of view?
Honestly, you know, most people looking at it be like, oh, the Nets, another losing season. From my perspective, I mean, it was a successful losing season. I think moving forward, there's a lot of nice pieces. Starting the year, losing Jeremy Lin in game one, D'Angelo being banged up. It was almost a blessing in disguise because so many players got to step up. We saw Dinwiddie make growth. We saw Caris LeVert, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Joe Harris establish himself. Jared Allen had an amazing rookie season. I think, you know, the overall, and Damari Carroll, who was supposed to be a salary dump, was great. And the overall culture, I think, is changing in Brooklyn. You know, you look at it and you're like, all right, this team is a team we actually have to start to respect. They're not going to maybe win a ton of games, but they're going to make you earn every win.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the Nets with you a couple times. I watched the Nets when they played the Pacers, I believe, in the opening night, and a couple other games, obviously, from just being in New York. And, you know, guys like Damari Carroll, who couldn't hit net or couldn't hit anything realistically in Toronto, had a resurgence. His value's way up, and they got two draft picks along with Carroll, which is kind of a steal and, you know, good for them, obviously. Caris LeVert, to me, I'm still upset that the Pacers traded him for basically for Thaddeus Young, but you know, it is what it is. I love Thaddeus Young, but Caris LeVert has shown that he could be a big-time ball handler going forward. Joe Harris was really good. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, again, kind of elevated his game. The jump shot was a lot better. The Nets just, they took strides, and that's what I'm sure you like to see. D'Angelo Russell, again, also, despite the shooting numbers being kind of low, he did have some big-time games. And that, I think Jared Allen also. I mean, the Nets have a lot of young talent that kind of pops off the page at you to degree. They have a chance to really be a threat, as you said, going forward. They play hard basketball. They seem to really like Kenny Atkins. They play hard from Sean Marks, is truly changing the culture in Brooklyn. And I think the Nets definitely are on the rise from last year to this year to the next year.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think Kenny Atkinson deserves a lot of credit, him and his coaching staff, for player development. You know, they might not have that true superstar, but like you said, they have a lot of good talent on the roster, possible all-stars on that team. And I'm excited moving forward to see what they can do. And honestly, we mentioned the Billy King trade with the Celtics and the trading those four first-round picks. Being in this position right now that the Nets are in with the talent they do have is very impressive. Most people will be like, oh, well, you know, they still didn't even win 30 games, or, you know, Caris LeVert or D'Angelo Russell or Jared Allen, they're not that great. Most of the cases, a lot of the media doesn't really pay attention to the Nets. And shout out to my boy Jared Allen, who was disrespected and didn't make the rookie team. But that's for another day.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely a little snub there. Books, they're projected to have possibly 14 million this year. The maximum cap space they could have going into this offseason is 16.5 million. What are your thoughts, Nick, on the Nets cap situation?
You know, 14 mil pretty much is what they're going to have. They could open up more if they want to move a Carroll or a Jeremy Lin. Both movable contracts. I think Damari's at about 14, Jeremy's at about 12. You know, Joe Harris's contract is probably going to take up some of that room because that's a guy they're definitely going to look to bring back. But there still is the flexibility. If they wanted to make a big move or they want to take another salary dump on, like I mentioned for the Knicks, a Kenneth Reed situation, there's also been ties to Milwaukee possibly moving a salary dump, and also Washington. So the Nets probably are another year. I don't think they're going to be really active in free agency. I think 2019 to be a year where they're kind of starting to attack a little bit, or 2020. Right now, I think, you know, maybe grab a couple young guys. Maybe that could help the team. But cap-wise, I think they're in a good situation. I wouldn't take any deals that hurt them long-term. But if they can get, you know, a salary dump that's only on a year or two, that's not too bad of a contract, I'd go for it.
Yeah, I agree. I think now it's about, to a degree, replenishing your chest of assets that you unfortunately lost because of Billy King. So now you're coming back from that, right? They got picks for when they got Damari Carroll. They've gotten picks when they – did they get a pick when they got Mozgov and Russell?
No, they gave up a pick, actually. But D'Angelo himself is pretty much a pick, only being, I think, 21 or 22.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So for me, I'm right there with you. I think you don't worry about going out there and getting, like, you know, overpaying for a veteran, or going out there and putting money out on several guys who, you know, may help you win a couple more games. I think you possibly trade Damari Carroll, like you mentioned, get another draft pick possibly, maybe move a Jeremy Lin, who – I mean, I'm a fan of Jeremy Lin, but the fact of the matter is he can't really stay healthy, and we really haven't seen him on the floor a lot the last couple of years. So maybe it's time to try and move him to get out from underneath him. But I definitely like where the Nets stand. If they get rid of Mozgov's contract, that would be awesome. But again, you know, this their time frame of winning isn't until after Mozgov's off the books, and Alan Crabb will possibly be off the books. He has an early termination in 2019-2020. But I agree with you, Nick. The cap situation is good for where the Nets are currently.
Yeah, no complaints for me. And, you know, I think you keep that flexibility, especially when you have guys. There's one thing they could extend, possibly Rondé, I believe, at the end of 2018, like in terms of December, which even if they don't want to keep him long term, I think would be the right move, just because he's a tradable asset, being that switchable player, you know, defensive versatility, and the improvements he made in his offensive game this year. He went from being essentially a pretty bad offensive player to being a solid offensive player that could score in isolation situations.
Yeah, I mean, his post game and mid range game was really nice to see. He kind of became a mid range knockdown jump shooter when he had the space, which was obviously really good to see from a guy who's pretty much had a broken jump shot most of his career. So Nick, the team needs for the Brooklyn Nets, what are they looking at? What do they need going on going into the 2018-2019 NBA season?
I think you maybe look at some small forward depth, maybe a young small forward piece that you might want to try out. Kind of similar to the Celtics, I think, you know, some size and some length will help, especially on the boards. Rebounding has been an issue. You know, in Kenny's system, you're always looking to add shooters. Defensively, you know, I think adding a defensive stud might help too, somebody who's a little bit more defensive-minded. Like I said, with the cap situation, they're not going to look for anybody big long-term, probably more so young guys or somebody on a 1 or 2 year deal.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I would like to see possibly a wing, maybe a small ball, or maybe a stretch four. Obviously, I know Ronnie Hollis Jefferson plays the four. Hopefully, he can develop a three-point shot, but still, I'm not sold on him being a starter in this league yet. So, you know, if he were to get a stretch four, maybe he'd go back to a bench role or something like that. But I agree that no matter who they go after, it should be a young player.
Yeah, the stretch four, I think it would be – there's a good possibility I think they handle that with their draft pick. That would be something I would look for in teams. Yeah, I know we're not really talking draft, but I think, you know, a shooting big is always something they could do, an upgrade from a Quincy AC. You know, Cunningham was pretty good for them, but, if you know, a younger type.
So the Nets have several free agents this offseason. They have Jahlil Okafor. They have Nick Stauskas.
Stauskas.
Nick Stalkett. Ah, say it one more time.
Call him Hot Sauce. That's his nickname.
All right. So they have Hot Sauce, which is I gotta say his name. Say it one more time for me.
Nick Stauskas.
They have Nick Stalkett. What? That's so difficult. Yeah. So Nick Stauskas. All right. Whatever. He's a restricted free agent. Dante Cunningham, Randy Foy, who did not play this most recent season, so he cannot be involved in any sign-in trades. Quincy AC, Joe Harris, and then James Webb and Milton Doyle are on two-way deals. Nick, what are the situation with these free agents for the Nets?
All right. Jahlil Okafor, you know, I think there's a chance he could be brought back, but it would be on a team-friendly deal. He really didn't show a ton being in Brooklyn, and he tends to complain about not getting minutes, but I think a lot of it has to do with his hustle on the court and his lack of athleticism. He's just not the quickest guy out there, and I think that really hurts him. Dante Cunningham, I wouldn't be opposed to bringing him back on a short veteran, you know, maybe a veteran minimum or a really short deal, low money. Quincy Acey, I think that's a guy that might end up leaving unless he comes back on, like I mentioned, in a veteran minimum type deal. Joe Harris is a guy I think that you're really looking at to keep. You know, he's a guy that you develop. He plays hard. He's improving his game. Not only is he a really good three-point shooter, he just knows how to play basketball the right way in terms of he's improved as a playmaker. He's one of the best, you know, drivers to the rim. Obviously, playing that three-point ball and people respect him so much at the three-point line, he hits him with the pump fake, a little fake here and there. But getting to the rim and driving and making shots at the rim, he's one of the best in the league at the wing position, which is very impressive from a guy, you know, with his athleticism and size. But Nick Stauskas, I just don't think they bring him back. I don't even think they offer him the qualifying offer because he's a restricted free agent. And the two-way contracts, see what happens with that. That's kind of a toss-up.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Okafor, if he wants to come back on like a really friendly deal, then I give him another chance. Otherwise, like you said, the few times I saw some highlights of him on the Nets, he didn't wow me. He had a couple of nice offensive games and some short minutes, but again, he looks very slow. He's just not made for this league currently. Hot Sauce, if he gets overpaid, then you don't even bother. Maybe if it's a little bit cheaper, you take a chance. Cunningham, I agree. Having a veteran like Cunningham can't hurt. I feel like he was a nice addition late in the season. Quincy Acey, again, that's kind of a toss-up to me. I don't think it matters one way or another, but I agree on Joe Harris. I think Joe Harris solidified himself as a possible key role player in the future. He's still relatively young, and, I mean, anytime you get a three-point shooter in today's league who can also drive, like you said, I mean, he drives fairly well for a guy his size and athletic ability. So I think Joe Harris is one of the guys you almost need to bring back.
Yeah, I'm all for Joe Harris. I mean, I don't even think if Nick Stauskas wanted to come back, I don't even think I would want him. He really didn't show much, and he was given a couple opportunities, and it just seems like he's not a great fit with the team.
So, Nick, who are some of the Nets' possible targets for this offseason?
You know, in this situation, I think the Nets need to keep cap flexibility. You know, they might go after a couple guys. You know, there could be possibly – there's been talk with Nets fans are trying to get some of their restricted guys in like a Julius Randle, Aaron Gordon, Jabari Parker. But I think in that term, you kind of want to avoid the long-term contracts. All those guys are going to be overpaid. And then you look at guys like maybe on a short-term deal, if you're looking at some veterans, a guy like Avery Bradley, who they've been tied to in the past, you know, adding some defense and shooting. Rodney Hood's not really a vet, and he's he's a restricted free agent. I wouldn't be surprised if the Cavs didn't even offer the qualifying offer and made him unrestricted. Mario Hezonja is a guy I really like because I think he has on-tap potential. Belinka from, I definitely pronounce his name wrong, from Minnesota. I think he's another guy. Nerlens Noel, you know, he's a guy similar to Jared Allen in terms of athleticism, you know, blocking ability, dunking. He's a guy I would look at. Irsan Ilyasova, just an international guy that can be that stretch four on a small deal. Lua Bamute, also a guy, Jeremy Grant. He's been a guy tied to the Nets a little bit, similar to a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Give you some nice athleticism, defense, small ball five to have off the bench.
Yeah, I'm similar to you on the restricted free agents front. I personally don't like Aaron Gordon. He showed some glimpses of being able to hit the three-point shot early last season, then he came back down to earth. Julius Randle, I like the thought of him to a degree, but I wouldn't want him playing a small ball five and taking away from Jared Allen. I think it could be big time. Jabari Parker, I ain't touching him because of the knees. And then you look, like you said, some of the smaller guys, like an Avery Bradley has got some interest because he didn't have a great year, so his value is a little bit diminished. Rodney Hood, I like you mentioned, because of how he played, the not wanting to play against the Raptors, he obviously played well in the finals, but it might have been too little too late. So I'm not sure what his value is, and I don't know if the Cavaliers will even, you know, bring him back unrestricted. And then, you know, some smaller guys, like maybe a Wade Ellington. I definitely want to bring back Joe Harris. But if I can't, you know, Bellinelli possibly. Maybe I go after a Seth Curry or a Yogi Ferrell who started his career in Brooklyn. But, yeah, I definitely think there's small moves to be made. I wouldn't lock up a veteran or put too much money into one player while you're still developing this young core.
Yeah, I definitely am on board with Seth Curry. I think that's an interesting guy, and he would fit the mold. Yogi, I think they already made the decision that they're just not really interested in those smaller-type guards. They chose Spencer over him, and I think that was a better decision to go with Dinwiddie. And I know it took a lot of heat at the time, but I think they turned out right in that situation. Not that Yogi's a bad player, but I think I like Dinwiddie's skill set and his ability to fit in multiple situations more than a guy like Yogi.
Yeah, I mean, I feel embarrassed. I didn't really think about Dinwiddie in that situation. I mentioned him. Dinwiddie, obviously, a most improved player of the year candidate this past year. He was tremendous. And I agree. I wouldn't bring in Yogi. I wouldn't mess with what they currently have in Russell, Jeremy Lin if he comes back, and then Dinwiddie.
Yeah, and Caris LeVert honestly is somewhat of a lead guard as well. And I think talking about trades a little bit, Dinwiddie's a guy that could possibly be moved. You know, he's on a great contract. He's on 1.6 mil, and it's non-guaranteed. Obviously, if you trade for him, you wouldn't cut him. But, you know, fitting him in a lot of different situations in terms of a competing team, a contending team, they want to add a player this year. And then they'll have his bird rights to sign him long-term when they make that move. And also, you know, like we talked about it earlier, Jeremy Lin possibly moved, Jamari Carroll being moved. And also the Nets, I think, would be interested in taking another salary dump. If that's Denver offering Kenneth Faried and the 14th pick for the Nets and the 29th pick in a swap, I think they would do that. There's been talk about Washington wanting to get under the luxury tax, and they have a ton of terrible contracts. You know, somebody like a Morsan Gartot, maybe trade one of their picks in the teens. Same thing for Milwaukee. There's been talk about them having interest in a Jamari Carroll. You know, getting in a win-now mode. Budenholzer is now the coach. Obviously, him and Carroll have a great relationship. That's another possibility. I think in the net situation, if you can move one of the guys or take on a bad contract this year and it means you don't do anything in free agency, you do it because you add that one more young player and you never know. We saw Donovan Mitchell drafted in the teens, and he ended up being possibly a superstar moving forward for the NBA.
I mean,
and also, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, hell, we saw Kyle Kuzma selected 27th, and he looks like a stud.
Yeah, he looks like a stud. And then also, in a situation where maybe you take on two bad contracts, you get two picks in the team, and then you try to move up in the lottery. You know, not, you know, top five or anything, but if you're in the bottom of the lottery, there's a player you really like that drops. I think that's an ideal situation. Then maybe you grab your star. You know, I'm still a believer in D'Angelo Russell. I still think he can be a star player. I think Jared Allen could be a star player, and I really like Caris LeVert as well. But I think there is still a need for adding that one-time, that big-time talent. If they're able to work a few trades, work a few guys, I think it'd be a possibility this year to move into the late lottery. I don't think they'll be able to move in the top five, top eight, but maybe if they got on the cusp of maybe like a 10, 11, or 12, especially with some of the picks that they're able to acquire, it could work out.
Yeah, especially in this draft class. Obviously, it's top-heavy, but more or less, it's actually a rather deep draft class, I feel like. There's a lot of value to be found. And again, you know, you get into the lottery pick, and, you know, who knows? Kawhi Leonard was a lottery pick several years ago. So it doesn't hurt. You don't have to be a top three pick to get a flourishing star in the NBA. You just got to find the right guy.
Yeah, and we've seen plenty of, you know, guys that are top three picks not even work out. I think Michael Porter Jr. is a guy that I've been thinking about because of the possibility about him dropping in the draft. You know, if you're able to kind of trade up, or if there's a guy, you know, the Nets don't really, you know, show their hand much in terms of there's not a lot of leaks about their situation or what's going on. And with Caris LeVert and Jaren Allen draft pick, not many people knew they were going to go with that pick. So there's probably a guy on their radar. And they said they had Jared Allen high on their board. You know, a lot of people will be like, well, every team's going to say that. But I truly believe they had Jared Allen very high on their board, and they were happy to get him in the situation they got him.
I agree.
So
that's going to wrap it up for the division free agency previews. But we're going to have a little fun now. So obviously the big fish on the market is LeBron James. We're going to do kind of like a LeBron, not a tracker, but we'll pretty much give it every team a possibility of possibly signing LeBron James. So we'll just start with the Raptors. Nick, what are the Raptors' chances? What's LeBron James' chances of going to Toronto?
I'll give him a 10% chance. I don't know if that's high or low. Obviously, there's a report that they're a dark horse team by Chris Haynes of ESPN. Obviously, there's a Drake connection there. But, I mean, cap-wise, it would be almost impossible.
I love how you had to make it. He said there's a Drake connection.
Yeah.
It's just funny that Drake is so powerful that he can possibly bring in free agents.
I mean, that would be the biggest thing he's done for Toronto, and obviously it would be really big for him, whatever happened with that Pusha T beef, but that's for another podcast another day. But I think, you know, maybe a 10% chance, and I feel like that even is a little high.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll go 10% with you just because the report said dark horse. Normally dark horses aren't announced to be dark horses, but
especially this
the Raptors, yeah, right? The Raptors, though, are supposedly a dark horse. The Boston Celtics. What are the chances?
If they have Kyrie Irving on the roster, 0%. If they have Kyrie on the roster, 0%. If Kyrie is not on the roster, I'll give them 10% as well.
See, I'm different. I actually feel like if Kyrie's on the roster, they have a better chance. I feel like LeBron James secretly loves Kyrie Irving. Even last night in the post game, he was mentioning how, you know, in 2015, when they lost to the Warriors, he was like, we didn't have Kyrie. And I was thinking in my head, I was like, well, you didn't have Kevin Love either, but you only talked about not having Kyrie. I think LeBron James still is in love with Kyrie. I think he loves his game. Obviously, I think their relationship may be too far gone. But I'll stay with Kyrie. I'll give it actually a 25% chance. But without Kyrie, I'll give it a zero because I just don't think it's really possible.
I see. I think if LeBron went there with Kyrie, there would be a troll move. Like, you'd be like, all right, Kyrie, you want to leave me? Guess what? You can't. Like, you're stuck with me. You got to deal with it. Because I think,
big brother.
I think LeBron was hurt that he left. Like, I think that really bothered him that he didn't want to play with him. And LeBron even said, you know, I want to make you the man, like, when I get older or you're, like, leading this team. And he even talked about him in a light. And I think it really bothered him. Obviously, we'll never really know.
So next up, we have the Philadelphia 76ers, which we know has been linked to LeBron James a lot. What are the chances LeBron ends up in Philly?
33% chance. I think this is probably one of the three teams that he'll really consider joining. He has a great relationship with Ben Simmons. He'll be on a dominant Eastern Conference team. You know, Joel Embiid's probably unlike any other big he's played with in their prime. So I think that would just, like, LeBron just wouldn't have to do that much. And he, like, we've seen him do this in his 15th season. There's no reason not to think he wouldn't be able to play like this in his 20th season if his workload is cut in half.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely one of the more intriguing teams. Obviously, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and whoever they keep, they all are young stars, so this team could really flourish. LeBron James mentioned he wants to kind of take a off-the-ball role as he heads into the second part of his the latter part of his career, excuse me. But I'm going to say 25% chance because I still think, although there's a lot of talent on this roster, I don't necessarily like the fit of LeBron and Ben Simmons next to each other. I know LeBron said he wants to play off ball, but I need to see that for me to, like, truly believe that. Cause I still feel like LeBron would, like, play off ball. And then after one quarter getting, you know, kicked in the dirt, he'd be like, all right, I'm going to start running the show again. And then Ben Simmons, who can't shoot, kind of would look out of sorts to me. So for me, it's the fit of him next to Ben Simmons that is my big question mark.
Yeah, and it's all LeBron. You know, if he wants to make it work, he'll make it work. If he doesn't think that'll work, he won't. I also could see LeBron becoming a lot better shooter later in his career, a more consistent shooter. It's not like he's had every season he's played in the league, he's been terrible from three. His one season in Miami, I'm pretty sure he shot close to 40%. So, and at times in the postseason before he hurt his hand, his shooting was looking good. So I think that's something to consider as well.
Well, yeah, and as you mentioned, his three-point shooting this year, too, was by far the best I've seen in a while, at least the confidence in taking it. He shot it with a lot of confidence. And then, also, you know, he had a couple game winners, too, one being a game-winning three-point against the Pacers. But also, with LeBron James, I think if he was to play off-ball, the one benefit, too, is he's kind of inconsistent from the free-throw line, and I think that, you know, obviously he's just not a great free throw shooter in general, but I think because of how much he has to do on the court, it makes him, you know, free throws a little bit harder when you're tired, I feel like. So yeah. Possibly if he is playing off ball, maybe his free throw numbers get up more. Maybe he can even get to the line more if he's not, you know, just playing a type of, you know, stretch four bully ball scenario.
Agreed. I think it's, you know, obviously getting rest, we're going to see a different LeBron.
Yeah, I don't even know what that LeBron looks like anymore at this point.
Yeah,
so moving on exactly. To the... So moving on to the New York Knicks, what are the Knicks' chances of getting the possible new King of New York, LeBron James?
I would probably say 0% chance. Like, just because the fact that LeBron, like, obviously Knicks fans will disagree, but the fact that Porzingis is not, like I've mentioned on the show already, I don't think Porzingis is going to play most of the season. I think he'll probably miss at least half, if not the whole season. Why is LeBron going to join a team to have a losing season or do what he just did last year and die in the core in the finals? Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I give this negative 10%. I think especially just because of how the Charles Oakley situation was handled, the Carmelo Anthony situation was handled, Porzingis being hurt, like you mentioned, Enes Kanter coming at him in the face and then, like, now, like, pretty much sucking up to him, like, bro, get out of here. Like, I think the Knicks have no chance. I saw a lot of LeBron James and Nick jerseys last night, and that's as far as I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm pretty spot on with you on there.
Lastly, we have your Brooklyn Nets. What are the chances the King himself blesses Barclays Center and wears a Brooklyn Nets jersey next year?
I'll give it a 0.00001 chance. The only two things I got to hold on to is LeBron kills it at Barclays Center. He's had some historical games there. One of his better postseason games he had against Paul Pierce talking shit in a Brooklyn uniform. And then also, when he was a free agent the first time he went to Miami, he said that Brooklyn really knew how to do a presentation. So I guess that's it. That's my 0.0001 chance of the Nets signing him.
Yeah, I'll say 0% chance too. Obviously, I don't think there's a chance that he goes to a team that's rebuilding and has a ton of young talent. Although I must say, I think if LeBron is looking at the teams between the Knicks and the Nets, I do think that he likes the Nets situation and the look of the Nets far more than he likes the look of the Knicks.
To be honest, you throw a superstar into the Nets situation, they have a great amount of complementary players. They're just not at that point yet. If you ask me, 2 or 3 years down the road with this Nets roster a little bit more developed, I think it would be really attractive for a LeBron James type player. You know, just having all the complementary guys that play, shoot, you know, you have a Jared Allen and a big, a lot of switchability. I think it would be a really nice roster, but they're just not there yet.
Yeah, it's the kind of team that LeBron likes. You know, a lot of shooters, the Nets shoot a lot of threes. That's the kind of scenario that LeBron James would like to be in. So,
yep. And that pretty much wraps it up for today. And if you wanted to catch more Nets coverage, you can check out the Brooklyn Buzz. Jack and I will be doing an off-season preview. And then also, if you want more independent, you know, just on one team previews, Corey's going to be doing on Flexus Hoops, all 30 teams. So check that out. As always, thank you guys for listening. We appreciate it. Any type of support is appreciated. And you can check us out on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OchiBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio.
Stay tuned and stay with us.